person, let me stay this way.
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Warrior's Way UCAN Studios. Our warrior this week is Scott Massey. Say hi.
How you doing, Isaac?
Doing good. All right, before we get to you, if you have not gone out and checked out spiritualwarfareunit.com, clicked on struggling, if you know someone that's struggling or needs help with food or clothes or baby formula or drug addiction or a DUI lawyer or any of those things, go to spiritualwarfareunit.com, click on struggling, get that information, and you can be the person that helps somebody. Also, if you grab your phone and go to United to Face Addiction, what is it, UAF?
UFAM, Unite to Face Addiction, Michigan.
All right. Unite to Face Addiction, Michigan. That's Scott's website. So if you want to check that out while we're talking, you can do that. That's up on the screen there. All right, now we'll get started. So, Scott, we were talking beforehand, but we're going to catch people up. I wanted to, you're from Skywood Recovery, correct?
Yep.
All right, give people a brief overview of what that is.
Yeah, so Skywood Recovery Center is a treatment facility in Augusta, Michigan, which is, like I kind of say, it's between Battle Creek and Kalamazoo. It's out in the country. It's
beautiful. Don't they make Kellogg's cereal out
yeah.
there?
Oh, yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we go right past the when I'm transporting somebody to treatment, and you go right past the plant there.
All right. How long has that been there?
5 years. So it's one of the newer facilities addressing addiction in the state and in the Midwest. And I can tell you after working, I've been there 5 years, and prior to that I was 12 years at Brighton Center for Recovery. So Skywood is one of the premier facilities. We're just starting to get, you know, well-known in the community.
Why would you say it's like a premier?
Because of what we offer. We're on a for a Midwest facility treating addiction. We're on 370 acres. It's a former golf course.
Wow!
And we utilize the whole
370 acres.
370. We got a couple lakes on the property, which we allow people to go fishing.
Wow!
Do some recreation on there. We still have a couple miles of cart path. So we bought some bikes. We do a lot of hiking. We have high ropes course. We also work with a community farm that we do a lot of equine therapy, which is with the horses.
Okay.
So we
able to like grow stuff like plants and tomato plants and stuff like that.
Well, you know, at the golf course, we worked with the DNR and we resettled it back to its natural setting. So we only kept two holes, the first and the 18th hole. So, you know, people could come and we got sets of golf clubs and they could play a couple holes. We got the driving range. But, you know, also the facility is just, you walk between facilities. So you're not in like a hospital setting.
Yeah.
So it's really a just a great holistic approach to treatment.
All right, so people that are going through drug rehabilitation at AA, they can go check this out, and they can do this at what, ufam.org?
Well, the Skywood, they can go right to, Google Skywood Recovery.
Okay.
They can go right to the site. It's part of a larger entity. Skywood is part of a national organization called Foundations Recovery Network. So we have facilities in California, Georgia, and you know the facilities are all, I mean, just beautiful facilities.
All right, cool. So now that we got where you're from and why you're here, I want to let people know about you. So you said you're originally from Detroit, right? Born there?
No, I was born in Dearborn, which is a suburb of Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
And then schooled there?
Yeah. So I went to Edsel Ford. Yep.
All right, and so were you there through your whole, like, childhood, teenage years?
I grew up in just an amazing community. Dearborn is the, you know, home of Henry Ford.
Right.
So, you know, I would say, you know, I grew up under the Blue Oval. I was a third generation that worked at Ford.
At Ford, okay.
But growing up in that community, you know, there was a park every couple blocks. There was a community pool. There was recreation. Mm-hmm. We had a recreation department second to none in the nation. Mm. It was kind of ironic. My dad on Sunday was inducted into the Dearborn Recreation Hall of Fame.
No kidding, for what?
Yeah, for boxing. In 1954, he won the Gold Gloves, the state Golden Gloves.
No kidding.
Through the Dearborn Rec Department.
Man, that's cool.
Yeah.
All right, so you said when you were growing up, now we were talking about this before we started, is back, so it was the 60s. So you would have been how old?
Yeah, so I was born in 64.
Okay.
And
then you had to go see someone about a learning disability at a young age, right?
Well, you know, I was always growing up in my early, even pre-K.
So four or five.
Yeah, nursery school before.
Really hyper?
You know, nursery school. Yeah, back then, yeah, it was called, you know, hyperactive. So I was diagnosed as hyperactive once I got into the school and I was mainstreamed into the school.
Yeah.
Back then, you know, they didn't have the resources like we do today.
Right.
So you had to be diagnosed or labeled LD.
LD,
learning disability.
So you're at how old?
Well, I was in kindergarten when I first went on Ritalin.
Yeah, so hold on. So you said you were a part of a study, like at the beginning of all this.
Yeah.
So you went and saw, so you were how old when this started?
Well, I don't know. How old are you when you're?
Four, five, six?
Yeah, at least six.
All right.
So, you know.
And had to go see somebody about being hyper?
Yeah, so my parents had some concerns about my behavior. I mean, there were some things that they told me that I never knew I did, like throwing a brick through our front window.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
Like through the living room?
Yeah, for no apparent reason, I guess.
Yeah, that's so high strung.
There was some behavioral issues that they identified.
Okay.
And went seeking answers. And my parents became very active in the MACLD, which is the Michigan Association for Learning Disabled.
Okay.
So, and my parents were always people that, you know, they wanted answers, they wanted to look for answers, and they were very proactive. So they got me involved with a whole bunch of different programs, but I was seeing a psychiatrist who was part of a research study out of the University of Michigan, and that's when I was first put on Ritalin.
So this is late 60s.
Yeah.
So this has been going on since then. I found that story to be interesting. I didn't realize it had been going on that long.
Like, yeah, well,
normally here in the 80s and 90s, but.
No. Yeah, in Ritalin was the first, you know, medication that
they
used. So, you know, you can imagine me growing up and, you know, having to be taken out of the room, go take my medication, coming back. And, you know, you talk about bullying now.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they take a pill, Scott.
Go take a chill pill, Scott.
kids
are known to be really nice, right?
Yeah.
Wow, that sucks. So as you had to go through that all of school?
Well, so what happened was when my parents put me on the Ritalin, it only lasted for like 3 months that they kept me on it because I went from extremes. I went from a kid who would bounce off walls, very disruptive in the classroom, to a kid that would cower in that corner.
Wow.
I mean, my personality changed so dramatically.
Wow.
And, you know, the reason...
Was it like instantaneous?
Pretty much.
Wow.
Yeah, because, I mean, what bothers me when I talk to clients and patients about addiction, mostly when it comes to our mental health, and a lot of us are being medicated.
We're
being medicated at younger and younger ages. When you know, I mean, you're talking about a kid in six, 7, 8 years old, with a very vulnerable brain, having, you know, basically being experimented on.
Yeah.
So, you know, just think about this. You know, I ask people a lot that are on medication for behavioral health issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the first thing the doctor does when he prescribes to you? You know, first question out of his mouth is going to be. Well, let's see how this works.
Let's see how it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, it is a practice.
Yeah,
it's like they're.
We don't know enough about the brain.
Yeah, you know? and the brain acts differently, and the recourses and the preset conditions and all that stuff.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. So, you know, so when people ask me, you know, when did your addiction start? I always say,
seven. Addiction started at seven.
Yeah.
All right. So here you are, Shavin. So you're going through this. You get off of it. What did you? Like, did your parents get you into sports?
Well, I mean, I was in sports. I mean, very young age, but
yeah, just to get the energy out.
Yeah. Right? So yeah. What's interesting about that, you bring up about getting the energy out. They actually, like I say, my parents were very proactive. So they found this gym, and all it was, what the heck, you jump on trampolines.
Trampoline, yeah.
It's all trampolines.
And, oh, yeah, whole gym.
And climbing ropes. And I did that after school every day. They take me to this place. And
just to get the energy out of you.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's
then,
cool.
You know, worked on a healthy diet, you know, right. that's huge. But, you know, it's carried throughout my life. I mean, you know, there's, you know, it's hard for me to stay focused a lot of times.
Yeah, yeah, like you see a shiny thing, and you're like, snorkel.
Like, nickel.
Yeah. What were you talking about? Yeah, no, I totally hear this. So, all right, so you're getting to high school. What were your grades like? What was that kind of situation?
Not good.
Yeah.
You know, and I, you know, I had a older sister, younger brother.
Yeah, yeah.
They excelled. Both scholastically and
yeah, I had a younger brother that excelled. So my dad would be like, "Well, let's see what you did. Let's see what your brother did." Yeah. Oh, and I was just like, "Man!" And it wasn't like I wasn't trying.
No,
I was just like, I just get a C. Yeah. And I was a BC student, you know, and that's just kind of where I sat.
Yeah.
And so, all right, so you're going through high school. You graduated what year?
I graduated '83.
Okay, and then what happened after graduation?
Well, that's interesting.
You were 18 or 17?
I don't know. I mean, I was older for my grade because my birthday is on Christmas, so
okay,
easy to remember my birthday. You know, I stayed in Dearborn. I started that June at the University of Michigan Dearborn. So, and okay. I got in, like I say, my parents were very proactive.
Yeah, so you're going to college.
I got in through a program called. The program for academic support.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, mostly it was geared towards, you know, back in '83, there was a lot of push towards minority.
Yeah, yeah.
Equality. Kind of, equality. Yeah. So I was able to kind of be able to take advantage of that with this past program.
Okay. And so what'd you go do? What were you studying?
Well, I was studying business, finance. You know,
and how'd that go?
Not too good.
Yeah. How long were you in that?
Well, it took me 5 years to I graduated in 5 years. I transferred out of University of Michigan Dearborn, went to Western, and you know the whole focus.
Did that make it better or worse?
No.
College.
Yeah, you know, and
partying life.
It
girls.
Was kind of interesting because you know my dad was, you know, had a plan. He was going to retire and he was going to start a family business.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew I kind of had that to fall on.
Yeah.
So going through college was more just a party.
Okay.
You know, knowing that I was going to fall back on something.
Right. My dad has already got that taken care of. On that note, that's a perfect time to go to our first break. If you've not gone to spiritualwarfareunit.com and use that to help somebody out, please do that. If you go to UFAM.org or UFAMMichigan.org and check out the recovery locations to see if there's something there that you can help somebody with, and sit tight. We'll be right back. Taking a quick break from our podcast, I wanted to let you know about our life application program that we have for churches and nonprofits in the area that are trying to find programming that they can use in case the corona shuts you down and you're not able to get in. You go to spiritualwarfareunit.com. Click on our episodes, and you can check out our programs for as little as $29.99 a month to make sure that we're still getting the word out to those people that need it. Now, back to the program. All right, welcome back to the Warrior's Way. Our warrior this week is Scott Massey, and he's with Skywood Recovery. And we were just getting into the college party time years. And anything major happen, or you're just kind of gliding through, you know, you're just kind of experiencing life as a young
Yeah, okay. I was pretty resourceful going through college,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I went year round. I stayed up in Kalamazoo.
Okay,
lived there during the summer, and I worked at a if you go into college, you got to work at a bar.
Yeah,
you know, because you become very popular.
You got to, right?
So I worked.
So you were a bartender?
Yeah, so I worked at a. Just a little shot in a beer.
Were you place. Tom Cruise in it?
Yeah, I mean, it was an awesome experience. But you know, it was in a rough area, Kalamazoo, and
okay,
you know, a lot, you know, you know, one night, you know, our supervisor, we couldn't find the supervisor.
Yeah.
We went to go grab, you know, to restock the beer. And where this bar was, it was basically two hotel rooms that were just knocked out for a bar.
Gotcha.
In this motel.
Yeah, yeah, I got you.
So when we finally found him, he was, they had belted him up and taped him. And,
wow.
You know, his pants down to his ankles.
Wow.
And he was a Marine too. But you know, they came in, they stole wow. his wallet and stole what money was in the.
And that was just part of the life, right?
Yeah. You know, we had, you know, I mean, right where we were, there was a lot of prostitution. So yeah. I remember a couple nights, you know, they running from the Johns or running from, you know, they'd come into the bar and lock themselves in the bathroom until they were escorted out.
No kidding. So any major experience in there that was like part of your makeup as a person, or are these just the experiences you
Well, you know, just, know you know, like I say, being resourceful, you know, we'd have a group of us kind of gravitated to one another, and mm-hmm. we got a house and we formed our own, you know, fraternity.
No kidding.
So, you know, I mean, just tongue in cheek, but
yeah,
you know, we had some great parties.
Yeah, sure.
And pretty, you know, pretty resourceful how we would do them.
Yeah.
You know, like to be admitted into the party, obviously, you know, to get a cup, you know, it's a couple bucks and a can of food.
Oh, there you go. And a can of food.
Yeah. So I was like, given to the, you know, so we had food for the semester.
There you go.
Every time we had a party.
Win-win, right?
Yeah.
All right. So you graduated, you were what, 23, 24?
I mean, time flies for me. I can't put everything in perspective.
Yeah. But, no, I, yeah. this is just way my
88, mind so what, yeah, 24.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. So 24, and your thought process is I'm just going to go back to my dad and he's going to do the home business thing at this time? Or?
Yeah, it was, so I went back home, was living with my parents, and they were going through a rough time. So
yeah.
They were on their way to divorce.
Uh-huh.
So I was kind of in that dysfunctional environment
right.
as well.
So what did you decide to do with that?
Well, my mom and I was also, I went into real estate. So mm-hmm. I ended up, you know, buying this, this was 89. I bought a house in the city of Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
$20,000. You could putt off the front lawn, you know, I was just, you know, well taken care of.
Yeah, yeah, well maintained.
Nice little area of Detroit.
Yeah.
So I was one of the first of my friends to buy a house. So then that turned into the party house.
Right, of course.
You know, so, you know, just almost every day.
No kidding.
Yeah, you know, one of my first roommates, you know, I had a band and he played right down the street. So spent a lot of time.
No kidding. You know, what did you do in the band?
Well, he was a singer, yeah.
What were you?
No,
he lived with me. Oh, he just was,
yeah.
Wow, that had to be loud.
Yeah, and then, you know, yeah, the parties after the bars closed, you know, just coming back.
Right. So how long does that last?
Oh, another 5-6 years.
No kidding.
You know, then I get married. And
that's early 30s.
Yeah.
All right, so you get married in your early 30s?
Yeah, I think
So this is the
90, yeah.
So this is all part of that whole scene, a rocking scene, hanging out scene. You met her.
Yeah, well, I had known her. So this is kind of, you know, how, you know, I don't know how dysfunctional I was. we had a long term relationship.
Oh, okay.
20 some years.
I got you. Everybody's and, dysfunctional.
You know, so it was like, you know, what's the next step? I mean,
yeah.
You know,
oh, this is what we're supposed married, to
right?
Do.
You know. Yeah, so
I gotcha. All right, so, and then any kids during that time?
Yeah, two beautiful girls. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. They're doing awesome. So my one just graduated from high school. The other's in school in Washington D.C. The one's going that just graduated from Fenton is going to Loyola in Chicago. So
wow, that's
yeah.
Cool.
They're spreading their wings.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so you're in your 30s and you're in Dearborn. You're doing the real estate. And
yeah, I'm at Kalamazoo now.
Oh, all right. So how did that happen?
Yeah, I know. Well, I went into rehab and then came out of rehab.
Now, what was the circumstance that said, yeah, I better go to rehab?
Well,
what
happened? Yeah, I guess I'm
that's all right. I'm
throwing
the detail
a lot
guy.
Of holes.
Yeah, you know, that's all right. We're fine.
During this time, I had bought a bar.
You bought a bar.
So
real estate's going well then.
Yeah, well, Yeah, I, you know, and I'd been, you know, working since I was a kid.
You know. And so you worked as hard as you partied.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So what happened? What made you move from Dearborn to Kalamazoo?
Well, you know, I had the bar for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Some things happened within the bar, mm-hmm. and I went to rehab in Minnesota. So.
All right. So was it like a mutual choice with you and your wife, or is you just saying, I got to get this done?
No, my wife wasn't part of it.
Okay.
You know, we weren't married at the time.
Yeah.
We were engaged.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, real quick, I'm off to treatment.
Yep.
And, you know, I come home and, you know, couldn't go back to the bar.
Right.
So.
Did you sell it or?
Yeah, we ended up, I had a partner.
Okay.
And he ran it for a couple of years. And I always say I was, you know, me and my partner, we were our own best customers. You know,
yeah.
So it was a blues bar too on top. It was really, I mean, it was a neat experience.
Okay. So you're how old at this time? Mid to late 30s?
Yeah.
35-ish?
Yeah.
All right, so you moved to KZOO then when you went back to Minnesota?
Yeah.
Just to get away from the scenario?
Well, she was living in Kalamazoo because she was running a dance studio. And then, so I started working for a family member out there.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so, and then a couple years later, got a job at Roush, Roush Engineering.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we were still living out there. And
how'd that happen? Someone you knew or?
Yeah, you know, I had worked, I think I had 20 some jobs within a 17 year period.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I was just going from, I mean, I had no rudder in the water.
Yeah. So the juggling process between the addiction and the thing is one was winning and the other's winning. And so you're bobbing. You're just, you're weaving a bob. Now, were you doing this by yourself? Was your like family involved?
Well, you know, my family, like I said, my parents were, you know, going through the divorce and then, you know, they owned some places in Florida. So they were going back and forth.
Yeah.
So
you're just kind of alone.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you know, the relationship I had with my wife at the time wasn't the tightest. Yeah. You know, so
no, I get it.
And you know, being a, you know, going through my addiction, I'd using the whole time.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, it got really dark. You know, it like I said, you know, going back talking about the brain chemistry when it comes to the Ritalin, when I think we talked earlier before we got on about what we're finding out in addiction today is, you know, the brain. There is a predisposition for addiction.
Right.
And what we're finding that to be is low dopamine. You're born with low dopamine. So that kind of took effect when I was put on that Ritalin initially. So it kind of set things in motion.
Right.
So then when I was, you know, in eighth grade, when I was introduced to cocaine, you know, Ritalin acts on the same receptor sites as.
Yeah. At eighth grade?
Yeah, eighth grade. So,
oh my gosh.
You know, I had family members that were.
All right.
You know,
so you're in your mid-30s. You're in the super dark time.
Yeah.
So. What happened next?
Well, it was kind of interesting. You know, so I had two children in diapers.
Yeah, two girls.
I got a raging crack cocaine addiction.
Okay.
I got a wife who, you know, could only deal with it the way she knew how.
Right.
It wasn't the best.
And, yeah, no one has a proper response to that lifestyle.
And she had some issues, you know, that she was dealing with. You know, she had a closed head injury that she was dealing with from a car accident a few years earlier.
Mm.
So emotionally, there was some detachment, and you know, no wife wants to believe they're married to a crack, addict.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
So there was, it got to a point I didn't know. You know, there were so many lies on top of lies. I didn't know what the truth was. And I was living, you know, I had a P.O. box and, you know, hiding bills and, you know, just cleaned out my 401k.
Right.
And
so all of this is coming to head, the finance and the relationship and the money, and it's all coming down to head. And what happens when it all crashes? Like, what happened?
Well, thank God. You know, I come from a very, you know, loving family that, you know, they're always looking for answers. So I had kind of separated from my family. They're doing their thing. You know, I'm talking about my parents and my brother and sister.
Yeah.
And they knew something was up.
Yeah.
They knew something was up. And I hadn't talked to my mom for months. And, what they were doing was they were planning an intervention. And so the day of my interventions, I always talk about it when I'm talking to clients. Cause a week earlier than from my intervention, my car had gotten stolen right out of my driveway.
Wow.
So, my wife at the time, she's going to school and she's working. You know, I hadn't worked for about a year and a half.
Yeah.
You know, I'm telling her I'm looking for jobs and she's out getting her education and working. And I'm at home just getting high.
Right.
And, you know, we got two kids in diapers.
Yeah.
And so I always tell the story the day of the intervention. So we're sharing a car. I got the kids in the car with her, and I drop her off at her job. She's working at the Gymboree, $8 an hour.
Right.
She's doing it, you know, because of the benefit of the clothes are cheaper, right? You know, you work for them, you get them at a discount for our kids.
Yeah.
And so I drop her off. We say our affectionate, F you. Off to work she goes.
Yeah.
And then that off to the crack dealer I go with my two kids in a car.
Right.
So, wow. But I knew I had an appointment with my aunt and, so I picked that up, just putting my kids through, I used in front of them. Went and picked up, drugs with them.
Yeah.
And they were very young. They were in the car seats, but they'd ask questions, daddy, why doesn't that house have a door and windows? Why don't they cut their grass?
Yeah.
Why aren't there any swings on that playground?
Yeah.
Daddy, why are you giving that man money?
Right.
I get to my aunt's house and walk in the door. And like I say, my mom was living in Florida. My dad was living in Florida. My sister was in Indianapolis.
Yeah. And they're all there.
And to see my mom was right, this first one person I saw. And to see, your mother who you love so much.
Yeah.
And she loves you so much, but she's got that look like, please don't run.
Yeah.
Come and sit down.
Yeah.
Listen to what we have to say. It was a love first intervention. It's the Jays out of, they're here from Michigan. They're nationally, internationally known for their interventions. But
all right. Well, before you get into that, we got to take a break. And if you've not gone to ufam.org and checked that out, please do. Hit Skyroot Recovery and check out Spiritual Warfare Unit. Like, share, and subscribe. We'll be right back.
I'm really impressed with the teachings that Isaac has been bringing to us, as this is all based from Proverbs.
I like it because it's simple. And it doesn't matter who you are. It's very easy to understand and apply to your life.
It points out, my bad parts and, but it's showing me how to do the good parts. And, I'm trying to apply that and, make a better life for myself because I'm tired of where I've been.
It's impacted a lot of the guys as they continue to talk and ask questions after the meetings as they speak to one another regarding the meeting and the messages. And the topics that are being brought up, which are down-to-earth topics of situations and things that we live with on a day-to-day basis.
He takes the Bible and he breaks it down into simple terms and where you can understand. And like I said before, a lot of churches, even the Salvation Army sometimes, we start using these big words that people don't understand, like even saying someone got saved. Well, what does that mean? What does it mean when you say someone got saved? And it's accepting Jesus into your heart. So it's like words like that that we use that people don't understand.
It's just very interesting how he points out, the different things of, the sin part. And then he comes back with the, how to make it better. And he just points it out. It's there. I didn't know all this stuff was in there. But now that he's pointing it out, it's like, wow. I guess if you really dig into the Bible, you find these things.
This is a daily moral standards that we can live by that the teachings are coming from. And honestly, we can take verse by verse as what he's done, and pretty much he's done the hard work for us and now laying it out so that we have an easier understanding.
There's some people who don't like to be in Bible classes, but this one seems to get their attention.
Yeah. Resentment. All right, welcome back to the Warrior's Way. Our warrior this week is Scott Massey, and we were just getting to the intervention, and I want to make sure we had time for this. So you walk in, there's everybody there. You see your mom's face. She says, please, she's got that please don't run look.
That just that loving look, that hopeless look.
So what'd you do?
Well, you know, I was ready. You know, prior to that, you know, I had been in and out of treatment, you know, 5-6 times.
Okay.
But, you know, now with the kids and just a dysfunctional, I had 2 domestic violences at the time. My wife at the time had one. It was a very dysfunctional household, and my kids were starting to witness this, and it just wasn't good. Mm-hmm. And I had a little bit of clarity. So, you know, I mean, I walked in, listened to what they had to say, and they had an interventionist there, and he had his car, and it was like,
we're going to take this moment.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I got 7 rocks of crack in the car. I'm like, well, can we wait till tomorrow?
You want to get the last one, right?
Oh, yeah. No, we're going now. You know, the bed's ready now. So got in the car with him and went to Brighton Center for Recovery.
Okay.
Brighton Hospital at the time.
All right. So you go in there. How long's the treatment?
Well, I was very fortunate. I, you know, like I say, I hadn't been working for almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Had no insurance. And they gave me a scholarship.
Okay.
And I was just so grateful. So understanding the significance of, you know, where I was in life and how to address this addiction. It took me a couple of weeks to get a clear head.
So you're like really, in your mid to late 30s right now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
I was 42, actually.
You're in your 40s.
Yeah, I was
42. Wow, so this whole process was almost
Okay,
so you're about 20 years. Yeah.
It's been a long lifestyle.
All right, so you're in your early 40s. Family comes in, intervention. You get someone, scholarships, pays for you to go to this program. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks in, your head's clear, and what happens?
Well, I stuck out, you know, the 30 days. But back then, they didn't have aftercare. You know, you weren't talking about what you're going to do when you leave treatment.
Right.
So I got out. I knew I couldn't go back home. I had to do some really drastic stuff. So
okay.
I went, you know, even though I got the kids at home, I got the wife at home, I just knew, you know, I wasn't going to be able to stay sober in the environment that home, you know,
gotcha.
Because my wife wasn't willing to be part of the solution.
Right. Sure.
You know, she
that's
always
your
was
problem,
gonna,
not
yeah,
my problem.
Right. She's always going to be able to point the finger at
sure.
it. And so I went to my brother's and hold myself there, reached out to the interventionist.
Now, where'd he live at?
He lived in Canton.
Okay.
Canton. Yep.
And, all right. So how long did that process go on for?
Well, just a couple of days, because I reached out to the interventionist. I said, hey, what's my next move? I got, you know.
You asked for help.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I knew I needed to stay in this process.
Right.
Because I'm a huge believer in the continuum of care.
Yes.
Because when you looked at I mean, I won't go into treatment specifics right now, but I just knew I needed to continue to focus on
so what
recovery.
Did you do to do that?
So I reached out to the interventionist. The interventionist suggested a program called Personalized Nursing and Lighthouse, which is out of Canton.
Personalized Nursing and Lighthouse?
PNLH.
Okay, and what do they do?
So what they had one of the only programs in the state. And, it was called an IOPD program.
Okay.
Intensive Outpatient with Domicile Living. So I went to this program, and, you know, I had nothing. So now I went through the state funding, you know, like the CMH, the Community Mental Health Organization.
Community Mental
Health. So they funded my treatment,
mm-hmm.
and then I just had to come up with the $50 a week for my housing.
Okay.
And was able to do that, and I stayed there for about 6 months. But I slowly reintegrated back into the community.
Right.
So I was doing my IOP, then stepped it down to an E, an extended outpatient thing, you know, just immersed in recovery.
Right.
So then I took a job, a midnight job, so I could continue to do programming during the day.
Yeah.
And then left that program, went back to Brighton, and volunteered there,
You love this thing,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I immerse myself.
Okay.
So on my two-year anniversary, the CEO of Brighton, Denise Burtnap, amazing woman, she offered me a job.
So this is you at 44, 45?
I was 44.
Okay.
Yeah, so she...
So two-year anniversary, she walks up and says...
This contract. I mean, when I went to sign it, it was all wet. Yeah, from the tears coming down my cheeks.
Because you realized you had purpose at that moment.
Oh, I had a life of purpose.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
There was nothing better than, you know, I worked at Roush. I worked at Ford.
Yeah.
You know, I could go back to
that environment. That's just making money. It's not making a difference, right?
No, I could make three times what I was offered, right? But it was that life of purpose, and I knew I had my family behind me. They were starting to understand it because, you know, I came from a strong Italian family where I was the oldest son, and it's like, what the hell's wrong with you, Scott?
Yeah.
Look at your sister. Look at your brother.
Yeah.
You know, why don't
How are the younger ones doing better than you?
Wow. But, you know, they started learning more about addiction, too.
And, yeah, so you're telling them what you're going through in the process, right?
Oh, I used to write, like, every month – every 3 months, I used to write, like, the people that were involved in helping me get to where I was. I would write an email to them and kind of just let them know what was going on in my life and how much I appreciated them. So, I mean, there was just so much going on.
Yeah, so what was that moment with your parents after you told them that? Like, that had to be an amazing moment.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. Well, unfortunately, that meant my first year of recovery was pretty tough because I filed for divorce while I was in treatment. I could write a book on this. I mean, it was the most dysfunctional.
We know the price. So you had to do a divorce. Yeah. What else did you
Well,
have to
then I had to file for bankruptcy.
Yeah.
It was funny. I was doing an open talk at Brighton and I got a call during the break and it was one of the Miliotechs, who I became so close with. Yeah. And she's like, Scott, what, you know, your car's being towed. Is there something wrong with it? Gosh.
Yeah.
It got repoed. They found it.
Yeah, that's the problem. They figured it out.
So I'm doing an open talk, and there goes my car being repoed. So then that year.
The ironic part of that's so funny.
Oh, yeah. I mean, everything that happened.
So you're doing so you're cleaning up all the messes.
Well, and then there's challenges being, started as well. So I lost my house to a fire and everything in it.
Wow.
And I found my mother dying. And
this all happened at the same time?
Within about a year of my...
No kidding. Oh.
So...
what happened with your mom?
Well, you know, my mother was living with me during the summers.
Okay.
So she came into town and she was helping, so she took my daughters to day camp. And it was raining that day, so she went up into the garage to close a window because of the rain, and she tripped and fell right on her nose. She called me. She said, I think I broke my nose, But she was able that whole day, take my kids to daycare, pick them up, do her work. When I finally got home that night, she had an ice pack on her head, so the signs of a broken nose weren't there. But what had happened was she was on Coumadin. And when she fell, she had a deep brain bleed. So she had a hemorrhage that was just slowly bleeding.
Oh.
And when the next morning, when my kids came running down saying, Daddy, Grandma needs you, I got up there. She couldn't open her eyes, couldn't speak, couldn't sit up. When we finally got EMS there and got her to the hospital, it was too late.
Yeah.
So
this all happened. This
first year of sobriety.
Yeah. And it's trying to get you back something awful.
Yeah. But I mean, I was just. I was so in tuned and doing what I was told and, know, what I had studied.
Listening to your support group and doing the stuff.
I mean, I went back to school for, back then, I was trying to learn as much as I could on addiction.
Yeah.
So I went back to school at Madonna University in Livonia. And back then, they didn't have what they have now. So I did a weekend educational group for addiction studies.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a certificate program.
Yeah.
Now you can get an MBA. I mean, you get not an MBA.
They have master's certificates.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how quickly things have changed in addiction field and in the recovery field.
All right. So you made it through the first year, which was every chance to go back and sit in there. And you get to year two, They offer you the job. Now, what's the job? Doing what?
Exactly. Well, first it was because of my background. When I was volunteering there, I was working a lot with the business development team.
Okay.
I was doing a lot of community outreach, but also doing a lot of analytical stuff. So they first hired me with this position they created for a data analyst.
Oh, okay.
Which was nice because, I'm a stats kind of guy. Brighton's got a long, long history. And there was a lot of documentation I could go through and kind of look at what was happening in our community and how it was being addressed, you know, because this was right at the start, you know, of the opiate epidemic.
Yeah.
So we started seeing, you know, I was able to look at the stats and, you know, how right. it was affecting what demographic
yeah,
and
what
stuff
day,
like
what
that.
Yeah, what day, what age, what time. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool. That see, I'm a nerd too. Yeah. Like I'm a chess player. I'm a nerd. I like my points and my pieces and my patterns and I love all that stuff, right? So I love my fellow nerds that like that stuff, right? And we all sit at the nerdery doing the nerd stuff. But it's very imperative, like, for the information for people doing it. So you're in your mid-40s at this point, and you're into this program, and everything is starting to work now as far as life goes?
Yeah, so I transitioned into a more active role in helping people than being that data analyst. So Brighton Hospital at the time was being integrated into the national organization, Ascension Health.
Okay.
So they got rid of the business development team and then they localized it with the hospital system.
Right. Which did what for you?
Well, then it opened up a position. You know, they said the gentleman who was going through and integrating us said, Scott, you know, why don't you form this community outreach business development role.
Which is what you're doing now.
Which is what I'm doing now, and I've been able to bring that to Skywood Recovery Center.
All right, perfect. That's a perfect spot to take our next break. Right. If you've not gone out to ufam.org yet, you pay attention to the screen, hit Spiritual Warfare Unit, like, share, and subscribe. We'll be right back.
Hey, it's Aaron with UCAN. Just out here today at the Valley Area Agency on Aging event, Senior Power Day. It's been really cool. We haven't been in the senior world very long, and I know it always plays a part in our world. So we're here today to connect with that senior community and kind of talk about the proper use, misuse, storage, and disposal of medications, making sure that they're not only are they using them as prescribed, but also disposing them as needed. So we're also bringing a multitude of services here that I'm looking at that allow us to connect and expand on our senior care initiative. So it was twofold. Share some information with the seniors that were out here, but also make some connection with those who are servicing the senior community to be able to expand our network of our senior initiative and make some connectivity. So we've met the folks from Valley Area Agency on Aging specifically, have some cool ideas already to work with them. We'll talk to McLaren and Genesee Health Plan as far as the Medicaid sign-ups and things like that. Veterans are here. The Genesee County Services for Veterans is here. So really have some great connectivity going. Good start to our senior care. A great day here. There's a lot of people here. There's been probably 200 to 300 people here. We've been here since 9, so it's been a rewarding event. Most people do look at our table and say addiction and don't look, but there has been those handful that do come over to us and say specifically, hey, can you come to this event or can you come speak to us here or there? And that's kind of what we're after. We're really after the focus on how we can continually expand our reach into this community. So it's been a good day. We look forward to continuing the rest of the day, and we'll circle back again another time. Thanks again.
All right, welcome back to our Warriors Way. Our warrior this week is Scott Massey, and we were just finishing up. He had just got his job working with, now that was Skywood?
No, with Brighton Center for Recovery.
Brighton Center for Recovery, okay. So you just got the job of basically what you're doing now, which like, kind of define that, like if someone...
Yeah, it's not definable in a way. I mean, basically, it's so. I mean, it encompasses everything. I mean, whatever it takes.
Like my
to
understanding,
help someone.
Yeah. So my understanding is, you find somebody where they're at, no matter where that is, and then you get them the help that they need, right?
Oh, yeah. So I mean, you know, in what's interesting, I mean, you know, working at Brighton now working at Skywood Recovery Center, they're both private, nonprofit, private organizations, which means they take private insurance. They don't work really much with Medicaid uninsured.
Okay.
So you have to work, you know, provide scholarships, things like that.
Right.
But I, you know, even working in that environment, I have strong relationships with the CMHs throughout the state, the community mental health organizations, which fund substance abuse treatment. So you know, and with the nonprofit that I founded, Unite to Face Addiction Michigan, we're able to provide resources and, you know, just provide.
So if someone wanted to get a hold of you to get all this, where would they go to do all that?
Well, the best bet, I mean, I give out my phone number. It's, you know, we should have put it up there, but, you know, it's 810-360-5779. And, I mean, I'm available 24/7. I mean, I have,
That's very brave of you to put that phone.
Oh, yeah, no, no. I got a good friend, Brandon Novak from the Jackass series.
Yeah.
This guy, I mean, you know, he's got a national following.
Yeah.
He's an amazing guy.
Yeah.
I love him to death, and he's doing so well. But he, you know, he'll go on. You know, I mean, he puts
all right. Well, you can't say you know somebody like that without telling me how you got to meet that guy.
Well,
I mean,
through Unite to Face Addiction. So Brandon, you know, there's a couple, a lot of national figures within the recovery community. So I got really involved. I go to, you know, once a year, go to Washington D.C. To do some advocacy, work with a lot of national programs to collaborate, and you know, it's a tight knit community. It's a great community. You know, and there's a lot of people, you know, that come from every walk of life.
All right.
So we try to utilize some of the people with the bigger names to be able to put together programs and attract them, you know. Right. So I work a lot with a gentleman named Mark Ludholm. He's from San Jose, California.
Okay.
I bring him in quite a bit, and he's a comedian. If you Google him, I always say he speaks 9 languages, and they're all English. So, I mean,
9 English languages.
Oh yeah. You know, we could speak at a, you know, $5,000 a plate dinner fundraiser, and he could speak at a, you know, juvenile detention facility, and he has the same impact. I mean, just amazing.
He's able to connect on all levels. Oh, yeah. Man, that's
just
cool.
An amazing guy. I've learned so much from him.
Yeah.
I'm just so appreciative of the friendship I have with him.
All right. So one of the things I always ask my people that come on, is there any funny stories or any ironic things that have happened in your life? They're like, because of this, you know, this funny thing kind of happened. So do you have anything like that?
You know, I got so many stories, you know, because, I mean, and mostly, most recently, just some of the things that have happened. But, you know, nothing that really, you know, rings out, you know. I try to look at everything from a perspective of humor.
Yeah.
Even though addiction is not funny.
Right.
But, you know, think about this. You can Google alcoholic humor, then try to Google heroin humor. You know, but...
Not a lot of jokes.
No. But, I mean, you know, the reason I say that is only because you got to be grounded in working in this area, in this, I don't want to say industry, in this area of helping people.
Right.
Because you're not just helping the individual, you're helping their family,
right,
helping the community. But
like one of the reasons I bring this up is because I have brain injury from a car accident, right? Like you were talking about with your ex-wife. And so if I don't laugh at my injury, I'm just going to cry about it, you know? And it's like you have certain things. And one of the things that I found funny is, you know, your personality changes because the brain just responds to things differently. So your personality is different than it prior from before, right? And one of the things I find funny about that is, like, I was very outgoing and laid back and very comfortable in society. And I was the guy that I could tell you to go out to the restaurant and this is what you want to eat and this is the drink and here's the sauce and dessert. And I was that guy. And then after the accident, you come back and you're fighting to get back into society. And, you know, you come back with one word answers. How are you doing? Fine. What's going on? Nothing. And you're like, man, people don't want to hang out anymore. It's like, well, you're not saying anything.
Yeah,
you're not doing anything.
Personality changed, huh?
And then the thing that made it funny was I'd go to restaurants and I was saying things that I was thinking. Right. So imagine what you would say if that didn't work.
Yeah, that stream of consciousness just letting loose.
Yeah, and you're not aware of the functional. Yeah. You're just like, you're like, man, I was just thinking that, you know. And so my wife stopped going out to restaurants with me, and I'm like, man, I'm hungry. She's like, I'm not chancing it. She's like, they're like spitting our food or something because you're going to say something. And that went on for like a while, right? And so it was one of the processes. Is like when you look back on it, you laugh because it's just like I had no idea that was going on. But everybody else is in that environment.
Yeah.
Like, And, you know.
Well, it's just like addiction. I mean, you know.
It's just
addiction. I was the last one to know I had a problem.
Right. Everybody and then you're like, really? Does. I thought I was hiding that pretty good.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
I wasn't?
Yeah.
You know, and that's the part I find, like, to be really funny is you think you're being slick, but it's like nobody, you're not.
No.
No, you can't get there. And so Skywood Recovery, do they have any events that you guys got going on?
Well,
you said you just
yeah, well, it's
one.
Interesting you say that. So, you know, Skywood Recovery Center, you know, where I work now, and, mm-hmm. you know, we're a 100-bed facility, like I say, on 350 acres. But we also have an outpatient facility in Royal Oak. And we're doing a Narcan training tomorrow. So, you know, that's at our outpatient facility. So, yeah, it's you know, working for this, Skywood has just been amazing because, you know, the director I work for, he's mm-hmm. also in recovery. A large contingent of my coworkers are all right. in recovery, and it's just, it's great because, you know, I could call them up at any time if we're running into an issue.
Yeah.
You know, we all work as a team to facilitate the needs of our clients.
So you just told me something when we started about something called Advocacy Day.
Advocacy,
just
yeah.
add that. What was
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so we just had it. So every third Thursday of May, mm-hmm. Unite to Face Addiction Michigan puts on a rally at the state capitol. So we take over the capitol. We have two large resource tents, 40 by 60 tents.
So, like, how many people do you have come on?
Well, this past year we had about 1,200. This past month we had about 1,200 people.
Wow.
There. You know, in previous years we've had over 3,000. You know, we came out of COVID.
People.
We hadn't done it in 2 years. We had close to 100 resource tables.
Wow.
We do integrative therapies while they're there. I bring in national speakers. This year it was Tony Mandridge. Mark Ludholm was EMC. Mm-hmm. We had a lot of local speakers as well. It's basically, we try to put a face and a voice to the issue.
Absolutely.
Of addiction. From prevention, treatment, recovery and advocacy. I mean, we want to, you know, and then we had almost 30 state legislators get on the steps of the Capitol and address wow. us and, you know, acknowledge that, you know, us. And that's why we do it on a Thursday, because they're in session. The legislators are in session.
Catch them at work.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah, yeah. And we take, you know, I mean, it's really a neat, neat day. And the people that attend, you know, really look forward to coming back. You know,
that's
so we're looking at ways to continue to do it. And another thing that we do is we do a recovery live tour. So the mm-hmm. rally we've been doing for about 5 years, the recovery live tour has been about 9 years.
Now, what is that recovery live tour?
So the recovery live tour is, you know, we built it up to be a full week now.
Okay.
So we'll like this past year. We didn't, you know, we were coming out of COVID, so we kind of, you know, just did a modified recovery life tour. But we started in Petoskey, Traverse City area. We came down to Kalamazoo.
But what are you doing for the tour?
Well, what we're doing is we're going into treatment centers. We're going into recovery community organizations. We're going into jails, prisons, juvenile detention facilities.
Okay.
And then during the day. And then we anchor it with live performances in the evening for the community.
Okay.
So we go into, we go all over the state.
Wow.
So, you know, that last year, you know, like I say, we started in Traverse City, went to Kalamazoo, over to Ann Arbor, Flint, Port Huron, and Detroit.
Okay.
So, and
can people find like where to find this stuff?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. So, you know, Yeah. So we put together we do our best at marketing. We still have a lot of work to do.
Help us, buddy.
So, but you know, we're building relationships, you know, through the collaboration, because basically the way I look at Unite to Face Addiction Michigan, where we first started, was just a way to, like I say, put a face and a voice to this issue, but then also show the collaborative efforts that are needed to highlight all the resources, because I can't tell you how many people call up looking for help.
Right.
And you know, we're struggling to identify all the resources that are available.
Right, and that's why at Spiritual Warfare, you know, our function is to provide those, mm-hmm. because outside of that, like being from the jail perspective of it, was how do we help these guys when they get out of this? Like, how do we make that community effective for them? And where do they get what issues they're going to have, you know, job, funding for housing, food, clothes, kid stuff.
Mm-hmm. And it, right.
I even got a school. And I was like, listen, if they're low income, no income, and you want to get them out of the public school, get them into an academy and get them there, and they got a U of M facility that they'll see your kids if under 15, regardless.
Well, and that's the thing. You're trying to lower the barriers to people trying to get help. Because
How it is? You don't know where it's at till you need it, and then you got to find it, and you don't even know what you're looking for.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, it delays you asking for help because you're so overwhelmed with, oh, I need this. Yep. You know, it can be so overwhelming that it defeats the person trying to get the help.
Supporting what you guys are doing, because you guys can't do this and that.
And without collaborating.
Right. And so, like, that's what we can do for you guys.
Right.
And so when you're getting out there, oh, yeah, there's just a list, you know, and we get the list, and it's for Genesee County. As we expand other counties, we'll get those. And having people on doing what you guys are doing, like, it's amazing. And the stories of those moments where you're coming in there, like, in my mind, I sit there and I see that moment when you're walking in. And like you said, your mom's standing there and you're like, oh. And then the before and after, and then how that moment, the decision is made, and some people will make the decision, well, I'm just going to get through this so I can get back to it. Yeah. And other people make the decision, I'm done with it. And you know, what was in the process? I guess the question I kind of want to ask you is, like, in your mind, when did you know I'm done with this thing? Was it when you knew you had purpose to help others with it, or was it at the intervention time, right?
No, believe me, because I knew I had the rocks of crack in the car.
Right, yeah.
And I didn't come home after treatment, and I knew they were still there.
You're still thinking about them after that.
I mean, I was thinking, you know, I better get them out. You know, I don't want my ex-wife to get in trouble if she stop. You know, but the thing was, it's when I got out of my own way.
When you say what do you mean?
Well, I got out of my own. When I started trying to direct traffic, right? When I started thinking I knew better than what everybody in front of me that got better did.
Right.
And I had those examples to follow, or, you know, and I was surrounded by some amazing people that, you know, they weren't thinking of themselves.
Right.
You know, they were thinking of the people around them and, you know, who they could help. And that just, you know, it was a spiritual, I mean, you know, I always want to be careful because I don't want to, you know, turn people, you know, people that are struggling away because they're so spiritually void, you know, and it's an amazing feeling when you feel a sense of, you know, I struggle with self-esteem all my life. I still do.
Right.
But, you know, I have a lot to offer, you know, and so does that person that I'm helping.
Right.
And right, just because you've been beat
up.
That.
Yeah, just because you've been beat up or bruised and kicked and put down doesn't mean you don't have value. It just means you don't see it. And there's a big difference between those two things. Scott Massey, I just want to thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Going to Skywood Recovery, brother. I love what you do. Yeah. I love your personality. That story was a great story. Thank you for sharing it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me.
Our audience. And if you know anyone that's struggling, please go ahead and check out Skywood Recovery. Please go to UFAM. If you haven't done it now at the end of the show is over. You'll have to check it out online. Thank you for coming into Spiritual Warfare Unit. If you have anybody you know that needs help, please tell them to go to Spiritual Warfare Unit. Click on Struggling, and our support programs are there. Thank you for coming in. We'll see you next week. Do you have a nonprofit in your area that's doing a lot of work that people should know about? Feel free to contact Spiritual Warfare Unit at 810-715-9319, and we would love to have them on to see what good they're doing in the community and find out their story. Thank you so much. Too much and let me stay this way.